You know my favorite saint?
Saint Obi.
Who's Saint Obi?
Actor. Hollywood actor.
Is that the rapper guy?
No.
Oh.
Saint Obi is like old school Hollywood.
Well, I know nothing about old school Hollywood or Hollywood, to be fair.
Who's your favorite saint?
Saint Vitus.
Why?
He's the patron saint of oversleeping.
Saint Victus.
Vitus.
Vitus.
Yes.
Okay. Wow.
I think I personally need him in my life. I know my mom would agree.
Wait, like so does sleep. He help people oversleep? Or?
No, he helps oversleepers.
Yeah.
I think he's also the patron saint of coffee houses, which I think, you know what, that makes sense.
But coffee, people don't sleep.
No, as in, like, I guess he's the patron saint of coffee houses. So to help them like be wake successful,
right, okay.
And then the patron saint of oversleepers,
right?
So that you'll be more gallant in the morning.
See, that's interesting because I thought the whole patron saint thing was a saint to embody a trait, good or bad.
Yeah, I guess.
I didn't realize the saints actually helped them.
You pray to saints now, don't you? You pray to saints.
I'm not half.
And neither am I. But
they
I
pray to saints.
So, I find it so fascinating.
I like the sort of discipline it comes with. And yeah, there's just something very nice
that's
about
that.
That's
one thing
them.
I quite like about like yeah. Islam as well.
Yeah.
It's just like structure, discipline. In the midst of this chaotic world, there's something makes sense.
Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful thing.
Hi. Welcome Hello. To Two Truths and a Dirty Lie, a podcast about facts, figures, and weird things from the past. I'm your host, Dez, and...
I'm Tintaya. I'm also here sometimes.
He's always here.
I'm always here.
He's literally always here. I've been trying to get rid of this man for years.
I'm not part of this podcast.
You know when you just think, like, how can I get rid of this man? And nothing has worked.
Have you tried murder?
You know, there's actually a patron saint for murderers.
What's his name?
I can't remember off the top of my head, but I was like, well, that's quite interesting. I didn't know they get this.
I mean, it seems fair that oversleepers get a saint. I mean, where is the bar at this point?
So, this week, we're not even talking about saints. Yeah. Well, talking about one.
Okay.
So about women waging war. If anyone hasn't listened to our bonus episode on female African kings or African female kings, you should, because there are some badass women there. But I remember I was thinking about what happens when, you know, with Nzinga, they killed her child. With Amani Reynas, they killed her husband and her son, and they took her eye.
Okay.
And I was like, what happens to a woman scorned? And not scorned in love for all this, you know.
Scorned by life.
Scorned by life. Like, what happens when you cross the wrong woman? So this week, talking about some women who have been wronged.
Some vengeful vixens.
Good morning to you too, Tim. Oh, yes.
Vengeful. Alliteration.
I'm
trying to think of more. That's why I'm being quiet right now.
I give you the facts.
Please.
Cool. Number one.
Yeah.
Jean de Belleville, also known as Jean de Clisson, also known as the Lioness of Brittany, was a French noblewoman who became a pirate to avenge her husband after he was executed for treason by the French king.
Right.
Number two. Olga, also known as Saint Olga. She's the patron saint for widows.
Yes.
And she's also one of, like, she's a Ukrainian saint.
She was from Ukraine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Olga was a 10th century princess who eradicated a tribe after they killed her husband, the Grand Prince Igor I.
Okay.
Murdered everyone. Nice. And then after that, she was sainted.
Was she alive?
You only sainted after you die. Don't be a saint while alive. What?
Give me my flowers while I can smell them.
Oh my gosh, you can still smell them because the belief is you're a saint. You know, like, death is not the end.
Okay, well, like, as a lawyer, technically. Are there any loopholes in this arrangement? What if your heart stops for like 30 seconds and you're declared a saint and then restart your heart? Do you think that could? Because you technically do pass away.
No.
Yeah.
Same thing. No.
Yeah, declared dead when your heart stops.
Okay, no.
Okay, all right. I just like to know my options.
No. And fact number three. Boudicca, a woman in Britain, in AD 60, chased out the Romans after they killed her husband and raped her daughters. She managed to temporarily chase the Romans out of the country.
She rallied forces and
sent them back where they came from.
Oh, fair. Interesting. The Roman, you know, relationship to Britain is so fascinating. It's something I never really get into, but I always see here and there in history and how long they spent, the amount of like all these, you know, like Arthurian legends, King Arthur, Merlin, a lot of that was
from like Roman times.
From like Roman times and everything.
I Britannica. Think they taught Britain something very important that the Britain decided to export here.
Colonization?
Yeah. It's like, why would you just go somewhere and say pay tax? You just got here.
Yeah, but they had legions.
Okay. Well, the British had ships and guns, and so they came here and said pay tax.
Yeah, they did.
Anyway, Buddha didn't like that, so, and she didn't like what they did to her daughter, so she...
It's crazy that even as a society, from young, we look at traits like bullying, and we're like, that's wrong. But then as adults, we're like, literally going with guns and ships to bully other countries. Like, we're here now, we have more guns than you. So
I think culturally, we're very different.
Yeah.
Because, well, you know, I was reading recently, there's another African history podcast, and they were talking about Dahomey, who I refuse, Dahomey women, who I refuse to call Amazons. And they were saying how the reason why they actually needed women fighters is because the Dahomey men were being given as tribute after they lost a war. Guess who they were fighting?
Oh, yeah, Empire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's taxing. They used to tax them. They used to tax them and take them in.
No, I mean, 100%. Oh, yeah, Empire used to, like, it was pretty
wild. I wish you guys could see Tim Tam because he's smiling. I'm not smiling.
It's like
Tim Tam, you can't stop smiling right now.
No, it's a messed up thing to have done, but like it's history. I don't think it's that messed up. It's empires and stuff like that.
I don't think it's that messed up.
I think it's also important to contextualize how Africans treated their slaves.
Yeah, very differently.
Versus how Europeans treated their slaves.
I mean, they treated them like they were not human beings.
Yeah.
To start off with, like, as in Europeans, they treated...
And, you know, with Europeans, it wasn't like they thought black people were lesser. They recognized them as people. Because this was before race theory came into play. They recognized black people as people. They were like, these are adult human beings. We are just from different parts of the world, but there's profit in slavery, so we are going to slave them, which somehow makes it worse. Because at least with later racism and, like, just, you know, race theory and stuff like that, these idiots had convinced themselves that, look, at least we're genetically superior or whatever. So they made a case for slavery then, but in the transatlantic slave trade, they hadn't done any of that work or mental gymnastics. They just said, you know what, we have more guns than them, we're going to make them work, and we're going to put them in ships.
Honestly, it makes me so angry.
It's very
angry. I hope this podcast doesn't make me need a
therapy.
Yeah, I'm getting angry.
You need a therapy before the podcast. don't put that on the podcast.
That is.
You could just go here.
I wonder if my therapist listens to this podcast. Okay, I ghosted her. I'm sorry. I'll be back soon. So, which is true?
Yeah.
Did a woman who eradicated tribe become a saint? Did Boudica chase the Romans out of Britain temporarily after they killed her husband? And did a French noblewoman join pirates and become a pirate because the King of France killed her husband?
I see that because there were a lot of European women in the age of piracy. You have Anne Bonny, for one. She used to dress up like a guy.
Anne Bonny was so cool.
So yeah, that can fly. Let me see. Then we have the woman who chased the Roman. See, that one, I don't really. It's possible. It's very possible. What was the other one?
Olga. Did she, like, genocide and then become a saint?
I think that's very, like, possible.
You have not a lot of faith in the Catholic Church.
Yeah, not right now. Yeah. Yeah, I'll give it. I think the dirty lie is the woman who chased the Romans out. I might be wrong, but I'm used to that by now.
Oh, babe, that sounded so sad.
I'm used to it. It's fine. Tell me I'm wrong. Just say it.
You're right.
What?
You're right.
Okay, wait, so what actually happened?
You are actually right. You want to know the truth?
Break it down. Break it down. That's what we're here for. That's what the podcast, that's okay. What we do. We break it down.
Should I leave the lie to end or get out the lie?
No, let's get the lie out.
Okay, Boudica. So she's a freedom fighter. Mm-hmm. And she almost drove the Romans out of the country.
Okay.
And she's considered one of the most iconic queens of Britain and probably one of the first British women who is mentioned in history. Mm-hmm. However, there is no direct evidence that she actually existed.
Right.
A lot of history relies on accounts of two classical authors, Tacitus and Cassius Dio, who wrote decades after her alleged battles between Boudica and the Romans. And the thing is, we actually don't know her real name, because Boudica derives from Buddha, the ancient British word for victory. But so there is some truth. There's some truth to her existence, which I will explain, but it's very hard to tell what the whole truth is. However, this is the tale of Boudica. Her husband had already died. His name was Prasatagus, and he was the ruler of the Iceni people.
Yeah.
And they lived in what is modern day Norfolk and South Suffolk,
okay,
and Cambridgeshire. He was a client king of the Romans after they invaded Britain. So he's essentially what you'd compare to, like, so what the Romans would have called a client king, we in Nigeria would have called a warrant chief, right? Where you're essentially like in charge of the people, but you also have to do what they say, give them taxes, they give you loans. So Boudica and Prasatagus had two daughters, and they were okay, you know, they were living their lives, they were doing what the Romans said to some degree, and they were also protecting their people.
Right.
But when he died, in his will, instead of giving his tribute back to the Romans as he was supposed to do, I guess in order to try and prove that he was not just a simple puppet of a foreign power, he left half. Oh, guess who the Roman emperor at this time was actually the worst one that we've.
What's his name? Nero.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. So he only bequeathed half of his wealth to Nero instead of all of his wealth. He left the other half to his daughters.
Okay.
Which, and like,
Nero heard about this.
Yeah, and they were like,
"Who snitched? Huh? Who snitched?"
Well, I mean, his will said you're only getting half.
Oh, he wrote it down.
Yeah.
Oh, he didn't try.
He
didn't play. He didn't play the game well.
Yeah. So
he was a lawyer at the time. Anyway.
Same time. You think you'd have done a better job?
Mm-hmm.
You'd have given them like
than the firm of Tacitus, Cassius, and Augusta.
So basically, the result was catastrophic. The Romans came. They looted his palace. They sacked his kingdom. They enslaved his relatives. They stripped all Iceni chiefs of their ancestral lands. They logged Boudica and gang-raped the princesses. This defilement of the princesses and Boudica was really, really difficult for the Iceni. Like, first, because Boudica is supposed to also embody the goddess that they worship. She's the supposed to be the physical embodiment of that, being their queen. So it's not just you're tarnishing us, like, you're also stepping on our beliefs and our god. Like, you're literally, it's, the disgrace was too much. The defilement, they considered it like a defilement. And they felt like it desecrated their entire culture and system of beliefs. So,
yeah.
Boudica plotted the Iceni revenge over Roman overlords, and they were furious. She went and allied with other tribes, including the Trinovantes, who were their southern neighbors, who they didn't usually even get on with. But the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Also, the Trinovantes had their own issues with the Romans. They had been ordered to pay for and build a gigantic temple to Emperor Claudius on their land. And they were just like, imagine, that's a lot actually. I mean, isn't that like forcing us to build churches? I guess. The British really helped, learned a lot from their own oppressors and exported that thing worldwide. So she caught the Romans unaware. After years of collaboration, there was no mercy shown to the few thousand Romans left defending their capital. They were butchered, burned alive. In fact, in the town called Camulodunum, they were completely annihilated. So after she annihilated the Roman capital, she went to what is today's considered London, but then was called Londonium. What?
Yeah,
London, Londinium.
Londinium, yeah.
Which was a relatively new Roman town. And she set the town to flames. They said there was like about 30,000 Romans who were there, their nobles, whatever. She didn't care. Every single one of them burned all to the sword. Like, you are all getting murdered. They called it an indescribable slaughter.
Oh, wow.
Well, you have to understand that these are Roman writers who are writing about Boudicca.
Mm-hmm.
But Cassius Dio says that women with had their breasts hacked off and sewn into their mouths.
That seems like a lot of work.
And their bodies were then skewered full length on wooden poles. There were mass executions and religious sacrifices. She burnt it to the ground, actually. Not nearly. She burnt it to the ground. So historians have said that there's actually a burn layer, like in the soil. So it happened. They're just not sure, like, oh, was it really Boudicca? Or who was Boudicca?
Mm-hmm.
According to Tacitus, some 70,000 Roman citizens and allies were killed.
Wow.
Yeah.
She was not playing.
Oh, she was not. And this is now, like, she's literally going down the country now. Like, she's going to Caledonium, then went to Londinium, then she's going to another, then she went to another town, which was of British allies of Romans. So these were not even Roman people, but they were allied with the Romans and they were doing their bidding.
And your friends can get it too.
And they did. And they did. So there's a lot in the historical accounts. They talk about how Boudicca gave really stirring speeches,
mm-hmm.
and that she had just strong morality and bravery, and that she had the gods on her side, and she had all that was good on her side. But the Romans were able to,
because they had a much larger army, they were able to quash this rebellion.
Yeah, but I mean, before they did, she did have her revenge. And apparently she killed herself with poison.
Okay.
So she was like, you're not gonna
kill me.
Kill me.
I'll kill myself. That's how good I am at killing. I'll do it myself.
Yeah. So for 2 millennia, Boudicca has been considered a hero, freedom fighter, and one source calls her a redhead virago. But yeah, she was a...
What's a virago?
I don't know, man. Do you want to Google that?
Real quick.
But yeah, when I first heard about Boudicca, like when I was reading Warrior Women, she was just this like, she just had like flowing ginger hair and just...
She was basically looking like Florence and the Machine.
Basically, actually.
A virago is a woman who demonstrates abundant masculine virtues. The word comes from the Latin word virago, meaning vigorous. From vir, meaning man or manlike, to which the suffix ago is added, the suffix that adds a new noun to the third declension with feminine grammatic.
A manly woman.
Well, not a manly woman physically, just a woman
with
who,
man attributes.
Yeah,
like men, like
aggression.
Okay.
Or whatever they consider it, like, you know, the second archaic sort of definition is a domineering, violent, or bad-tempered woman.
I love that.
I think if you beat me in public and rape my daughters, I'd be bad tempered. It doesn't seem like something you typically be
chill about.
Yeah. Anyway, shout out to Boudicca. You live and you learn, right?
Shout out to Boudicca. She got her revenge.
Yeah, she got hers.
So let's talk about, I'll leave Olga last because, man, Olga. Oburiburu.
What did Olga do?
I said we leave that.
Anyway, that name Olga is always.
You know what? Because I actually ended up on Olga. One, I learned about Olga a while ago when I was doing research for an episode, Just Not Saints, which we can still do. Because,
yeah.
Bro.
Saints was wild.
they were wilding.
Yeah.
But it's because I saw this video. There was this video that went viral. Did you see the video that went viral about this Ukrainian woman who approaches Russian soldiers and she's shouting on them like, why are you here?
Mm.
You're my enemy. What are you doing here? And they're like, and she's like, you're fascist, you're enemies, you're oppressors. And then she's like, take these. And she tries to stuff sunflower seeds in their pockets. And she's like, when you're dead and lay here, at least we'll get some flowers.
And they took the seeds, like,
okay. No, to be honest, like,
no, they're taking the seeds.
These Russian
sunflower seeds are delicious. What?
Are you a bird? Why do you think sunflower
seeds? You've never had sunflower seeds before?
No, am I a bird?
No, they're delicious. They're a snack. I'm not even joking.
I know you're not joking because I've seen them, like, in snack aisles.
They're
and I'm
fun.
Like,
they're really
I
good.
Look at them and I'm like, am I a bird?
No, they're delicious. I used to have them when I was a kid. My mom and her friends would just lay their mouth all over.
Let's talk about Jean de Clisson, the lioness of Brittany, who named her ship My Revenge. Because we're talking about revenge. Mm-mm.
Sounds like an emo song.
Bro, I like people who take... Do you know that Soviet girl who was fighting the Nazis who named her tank, like, the girlfriend's revenge or something?
No, that sounds funny.
Yeah, like, they killed her husband or fiancé in battle, and she used her own money. She sent it to the Russian Defense Forces and was like, I would like my own personal tank, please.
And they were like, okay.
They were like, okay.
They just gave it to her.
They gave it to her. They were like, okay, they gave it to her. They gave her, they trained her.
Yeah.
And they, like, sent her, like, into battle. Because then she became this, like, cool celeb, right?
Yeah. Why aren't we talking about her?
Huh?
Why aren't we talking about
her? We can.
Yeah, that's, I mean.
We are right currently right now.
So, did she get died? Did she get caught? Like, what happened?
So, Tank Girl is called Maria Vasilyevna Oktyabrskaya.
Okay.
She was a Soviet tank driver and mechanic who fought on the Eastern Front against Nazi Germany during World War II. She named her tank the Fighting Girlfriend.
Aww.
No, that's badass.
That's a badass.
That is badass. So her husband was killed fighting in 1941. She sold all her possessions to donate it to get a tank for the war effort, and she requested that she be allowed to drive it. She received it and she was trained to drive and fix a T-34 medium tank. She proved her ability and bravery in battle to the point where she was promoted to the rank of sergeant, and she died from wounds, from battle wounds, in 1944. And was posthumously named a hero of the Soviet Union, the Soviet Union's highest honor for bravery during combat. She was the first female tank driver to be awarded the title.
That is so bad.
That is Tank Girl. She was actually Ukrainian. I'm sorry, it's not funny because now they're fighting each other.
There's something in the water.
Yeah. But she was actually from a poor Ukrainian family in the Crimean Peninsula. Yeah. And she worked as a telephone operator before she met her husband Ilya and became involved in the Military Wives Council and then trained as a nurse. She was, like, really into it.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay, let's go back to Jean, the lioness of Brittany.
That's cool.
By the way, this was her third husband that they killed.
Oh god. They killed the first two as well.
No, so the first one died. She married the guy, he died. And then because he died and she had two young children, she just quickly married another guy.
Okay.
But that one was annulled because the guy was of the House of Panthevir.
He was a noble.
He was a noble, she was a noble.
Yeah.
But a particular faction, the Dubois faction of, like, his family, laid a complaint to the Bishop of Van and Ren to protect their heritage, and the marriage ended up being annulled by Pope John the 22nd. I couldn't read my Roman numerals for a second. So he then remarried someone else. So her second marriage got involved, annulled because of land disputes, really. So then she married a third guy, Olivier de Clisson, who was a wealthy Breton, which is like Bretton.
Yeah, like literally Boudica.
No, I thought that was Breton, as in like Britton, but that's the place.
No.
There's Britain, B-R-E-T-O-N.
His is B-R-E.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's why I said, why I spelled it out, because it's not Britain, like,
okay.
B-R-I-T-O-N. Okay. Yeah, man, French, English, they've had their things, man. Their history is complex, what can I say? The guy came with a castle. Her third husband came with a castle. He had 5 kids. You see, Nepal's taking less again.
Sorry.
We're suffering.
Okay.
You're okay.
I'm all right. I'll live.
I mean, will we live?
I'll live.
I'll sweat. So, her third marriage, she had Isabel Maurice Olivier V, Guillaume, and Jean.
Mm.
Her son, Olivier the Fitch, ended up with the nickname The Butcher.
Olivier the Fifth.
Yeah. Okay. And he became a future constable of France. But that's a whole nother story.
Right.
So her husband was a Breton. And the Duchy of Brittany was then French. But British Empire was British. We're trying to get Brittany from the French, right? Her husband was in charge of Vannes. And in 1342, the English, after 4 attempts, captured the city of Vannes. Her husband was captured when the city was captured because he was in charge. He was the military commander in charge, right? Yeah. He was released in exchange for Ralph de Stafford, who was the first Earl of Stafford, who was a prisoner of the French. But a surprisingly low sum was demanded for his ransom. So because a low sum was demanded for his ransom, the Dubois, that same family that did not let her marry that annulled the second marriage, right? Charles Dubois, who was part of that family, was like, they didn't ask for that much money. He must be a traitor. He must have let them have Van and then just pretended to have been captured. So he was taken to the King of France and killed. And then his head was put on display on the gates at Savetout. Now, Jean took her 2 young sons, Olivier the Fifth, the one who becomes the butcher, and Guillaume. And she takes them from Clisson to Nantes to show them the head of their father, enraged. And she swore retribution against the French king, who was Philip the Sixth. And against Charles. She considered their actions to be cowardly murder. She thought Charles just wanted to get Van from her husband. He's like buddy-buddy with the king. She feels like you're just plotting this because you want my lands or my husband's lands. Like, this is just murder. So after she shows her sons, their father said, like, see what they did to daddy? I'm going to go and avenge him. But no matter what happens to me, you people, when you grow up, make sure that they feel your wrath. The one who was named after his daddy took that P seriously. That's why he becomes the butcher.
Butcher's coming.
The butcher's coming. But she then goes to the English. She sails across the channel, goes to the English, and she's like, yo, I need some help. I want to become a pirate. With help of the king and some Breton sympathizers, she outfits 3 warships, paints them black, dyes their sails red, and names the flagship My Revenge. She then proceeds to murk French people. I say murk a lot on this podcast. I think people now know that means kill.
Yeah, murder.
Murder. Murk. Murder in a very, like, she would kill everyone on the ship and leave 1 or 2.
To tell the story.
To tell the king.
Okay.
She's like, I'm leaving you alive so you can go back and tell that murderous little king that I'm coming for him. She even attacked some coastal villages in Normandy and put several to sword and to fire.
Wow.
Yeah, she took it very, very seriously. Do you know what it is? Imagine, like, you see a ship that's painted black with red sails heading towards you. She's not even trying to code that she's a pirate. She's not even trying to code what she's about. She named the ship My Revenge. This is a woman who was born a noble, married nobles, was living a soft life.
And they took it from her. She had to take something from them.
They didn't take the soft life. They took her husband from her.
Yeah, they took, when they took her husband, then they get the lands as well.
No, what I'm saying is that like she could have been like, wow, you guys have really hurt me, and maybe have prepare her son to do
or
something.
Move to another country or something. Yeah,
not even, but or even just try and avenge through her son. Like when you grow up, take everything that the Dubois own. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Create a family beef. No, she said, I'm taking this into my own hand now. So yeah.
So how did she get caught? She get caught. She must have gotten caught.
No. After that, she just kind of moves to England and marries a fourth guy.
Also a noble.
Yeah. He was not a noble. So he was a high military leader who then gets elevated.
To a sir.
He was a lieutenant.
Lieutenant.
Lieutenant?
I love when they say that.
Who says lieutenant?
English, what do you call it? English olden English people at this time would have said lieutenant instead of lieutenant.
I see. So he was a lieutenant. After he won the Battle of Morun, he was awarded with lands and castles. So she did return to some sort of
softness.
Yeah, they had some treaty with Duke Charles, Duke of Brittany, and so she eventually was returned. The Black Plague happened and the countries were exhausted from fighting and there were a lot of dead people, so she was granted the barony of La Roche-Mouson as compensation for her troubles, because the English were able to wrestle her properties from the French and then the English basically gave it back to her. And she settled in the castle of Hennebont and died peacefully in a castle.
A little bit happy ending.
Yeah. So yeah, that is the pirate Lioness of Brittany. In the year 945, Igor, the ruler of the Kievan Rus in what is today Ukraine, Belarus, and Russia, traveled to the edges of his empire to a local tribe known as the Drevlians to know why they had stopped paying tribute. When he got there and asked, "You stop paying your taxes?" They were like,
Yeah. Do it again.
Because we don't like you. Duh. They tie his legs to different logs, tree logs, and pull them apart till he's torn in half. And then
they
send
about splitting hairs. It's just so strange. There's just always one creative guy in the world. It's like, no. They're like, let's burn him, let's kill him. And then one guy's just like, no, wait. I know what I did. Wally, get the ropes. I know what I did. Check will hold his leg. But they hold the other. There's just always one creative guy in it. You want an angry mob without a creative guy.
No, you want an angry mob
without a creative guy.
No, but have you ever looked into medieval torture devices?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Oh, my gosh.
They were all creative guys.
But
also,
guys.
They didn't have the internet then.
And people so they just, had time.
People died all the time. So for them, it was just like, let's innovate dying.
Let's make this more interesting. Yeah, like, fun. If you're going to kill someone, draw it out, make it, you know. Do you know apparently the guy who created the, you know, that torture ball thing?
Which ones?
There are many torture balls. I think it's the one where you like, they put you inside and they boil you alive and just
like a coffin.
Yeah, but apparently the guy who created it, they tested it out on him
and he didn't survive. He was that good an inventor.
So anyways, this is how they kill her husband. And apparently, like, she was a young bride. She would have been about 20 at this point in time. So a bit about Olga of Kiev. She was born to Viking parents in Pskov, northern Russia, around the turn of the 10th century. And she had married Igor when she was really young, and they had a 2-year-old son. She was a Viking woman, like Lagatha.
Okay.
Don't you know who Lagatha is?
Yeah, I watch Vikings. I think they're very different times, though. Actually, they weren't.
No, they're not different times. But I mean,
they're pretty much around the same time.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
The Viking age is like, it's not very long. It's like 100 years or something.
So he was tied to three. What do you need a third trunk for? Oh, I guess to hold the head up while they're pulling the other two in different directions. Anyways, he was tied to the tree trunks and they were released, so his body was split into two. And they left his, sent his body back to his wife and his 3-year-old son. Still toddler.
Like they sent one to the 3-year-old as well.
No, as in they sent the oh, they two halves. They
I thought they split it and they were like one for you and one
for you. In the weeks and months that followed, Olga stewed. And then while she was stewing, the Prince Mal, the Drevlian prince who had killed her husband, sent emissaries to her to say, let's marry. I'd like your husband's kingdom, so let's get married. I heard you're a cute little 20-year-old thing. Just have a baby, little baby son. So let's just, you know. And Olga was like, okay, let me think about it. So she tells the emissaries, just wait. Let me think about it, you know. She goes back to town, tells her people to dig a ditch, buries all of them alive.
Oh,
this is just the beginning. Olga is just getting started.
Oh.
Then she sends a message to Prince Mal and she's like, of course I'll marry you. That makes sense. But in order for your people to understand the significance of this, in order for my people to accept it, you have to send your best, your elite, to take me as in this wedding procession, like to come and get me. You cannot just send some random emissaries. They're chilling here, but these are not the people who are going to bring me back to your village. You know, you have to send your best, your most elite.
Troops.
Yeah.
Boys.
So he sent his big dons, you know. And when they come, all these elite men.
Mm-hmm. Warriors of renown.
You know, not, you know, just some warriors, some
Chiefs.
Or
Yarls, or that's what they're called. Was it?
Yeah, I'm not even sure. Yeah. Yarls. Let me say, all these words, if I could not pronounce it, I just left it out of my notes. But then she was like, welcome to my humble abode. Let's draw a bath for you. We prepared a bath, you know. So they go to the bathhouse, lock the doors, and burn them alive. Now, do you think she's done?
Of course not. This is just the beginning.
She's warming up. Mm-hmm. She is warming up.
So are they.
For her. That is horrific.
Yeah.
For her third reprisal, she went to the place where they had killed her husband, telling those there that she wished to hold a funeral feast to commemorate him. So hundreds and hundreds of these people who were there when her husband was killed, she was like, we have to hold a feast to commemorate my dead husband.
Yeah.
When they got happy and haley and drunk, she ordered her very sober men to cut off all their heads, to kill them, mark them, kill them as they stumbled about town. She killed everybody. And then for her final act, because at this time she has now killed all their elite, she's killed their embassy, she's killed their soldiers. So she goes to the Drevlian base of Iskorestin, which is the modern day Ukrainian city of Korestin. And she said, you guys, I have avenged my husband's death. I have killed all your elders. I have killed your soldiers. So I've come with an offer of peace. But as a sign of peace, from each house, I want 3 pigeons and 3 sparrows. Everybody ran and got their pigeons and sparrows because, I mean, this woman is.
Yeah.
They're like, okay. But when Olga had all the birds in her possession, she had her men tie a sulfurous cloth to each leg, like each leg for each bird. And then she let the birds go. And the birds flew back to their nests for the night. And the sulfur set every single building on fire.
What is this? What is happening? This is like a Quentin Tarantino film.
Yeah, but this is just Olga in her head thinking up these things. Like, this is a 20-year-old Ukrainian girl.
My girl is a professional hater, man.
She is a pro. Like,
she's just looking around and hating everyone.
Everything she's done now has been clean cut. This reminds me of, can I remember when, this is a Game of Thrones reference, when Daenerys, I swear there was like a bathhouse scene now, where she literally set the whole bathhouse on fire.
Is it where they tried to take her dragon?
When they, when she was caught, this is all ogre. So she sets every single house on fire, and like they have to run away because every house is burning to the ground. And she orders her men to catch anyone who tries to escape, and to kill them, or to take them into slavery. After that, after the Drevlians were enslaved or dead, she was like, okay, I've enacted my revenge, I'm good. And she goes back and serves as regent.
Wow.
Yeah. And then later in life, she like finds God and becomes a Catholic and a saint.
Saint Olga. Wow. That was a lot.
She lived, yeah. It was actually, I left her for the end.
She lived what?
No, she lived for another 25 years after this.
So she died at 45.
Nearly 50, heading towards 50, which is a ripe old age in that time.
In that time, that's like a solid 70 years.
Yeah, and so her grandson is Volodymyr the Great, who expanded the kingdom into what is now seen as the first Russian principality, and which Vladimir Putin now views as the forerunner of the Imperial Russian state. So her family is like important in both Ukrainian and Russian history. Like her,
that's probably why he wants her son. I mean, one of the reasons why he wants Ukraine back so much.
I mean, because they've been entangled for a very long time. But yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah. Oof. She's regarded by the Eastern Orthodox and Greek Catholic churches as Isapostolos, which is equal to an apostle.
Oh wow.
She's not even like a small, like obscure saint. She's like
a major one.
No, she's a significant one, in that, yeah. But yeah, man. Whew. Don't mess with people. Cause you never know. Every action deserves an equal and
sometimes unequal reaction.
Yeah, every action begets a reaction, and you never know what that reaction is going to be.
Yeah, God's skill is different from your skill.
So, you know, always be on your best behavior.
All right, guys.
Have a lovely week.
Bye.